Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is American Health Crisis Blog Talk Radio. We're doing something different this time because we have a parenting corner, as I want to call it, or caller. Tonight, we're going to be talking about time, affection, optimism, what it looks like. When we offer our children our time, our affection, and our sense of optimism, hopefulness, and confidence about the future or the successful outcome, the talk had been amicable, and there were grounds for optimism. Today's adolescents, teenagers, and young adults need role models and mentors. Barbara Coloroso, who is a known international, who is known internationally as a speaker, author of 7 books in the area of parenting. She's also a teacher, educator. She's done school in the area of school discipline, nonviolence, resolution, and reconciliation, and much more. So today's adolescents and young adults, they really need role models and mentors. So what Barbara, she's going to talk about parenting, your time, what it looks like for different ages, showing you affection and optimism, how to role model this for the different age group. Barbara Coloroso, I have her information also to be up on the website, so you can reach her at any time. Okay, Barbara, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Paulette. It's really a joy and an honor to be here to discuss something I feel very strongly about, and that is raising responsible, resourceful, resilient, compassionate human beings who know how to think, not just what to think, who are willing to stand up for values and against injustices, are not easily led, who don't do to please, but are willing to take full responsibility for their own actions and not to make excuses or blame others. But it starts with our walking our talk and talking our walk. And I'll get into that in a bit. But along with that, we have to know where we're coming from. I have 3 basic philosophical tenets. Kids are worth it. Won't treat them in a way I myself would not want to be treated. And if it works, it must leave my dignity and my child's dignity intact. But within that, we need to give our children 6 critical life messages every day. I believe in you. I trust in you. I know you can handle this. You're listened to, you're cared for, and you're very important to me. So do we really listen to our children, or do we assume what they're going to say and then answer it before they've even been able to get it out? Or with adolescents, with adolescents, they walk in the door, you say, how was your day? Meanwhile, we're on our computer or on our phone. But we've asked them a question, how's your day? And they go, fine. But their shoulders are slumped, their head's down. This is not fine. And we need to give them that time that we can begin to tune in exactly to what's going on with them. So within those 6 critical life messages is the Tao of parenting. Now, Tao is a Zen Buddhist term. It means a path. There's not one way to raise children. And if you have more than one child, as I had 3 and 3 grandchildren, they're all like day, night, and afternoon. And as they're growing, they develop their own personalities. So what we want to do is to be able to read our children's body language, their tone of voice. Because remember, we speak 5 ways, our bodies, our face, our eyes, our tone of voice, and what we actually say. Only 20% of what I communicate with my child and 20% of what they're communicating is done with words. The rest is how our body's responding when those words are being spoken or not spoken. So when they have head down and they say, it's fine, I just turn around and say, talk to me about it. Tell me about it. It's a line you can use in lots of situations, but we need to take the time to do that. And some of that time's just hanging time, just being around time. One of my favorite commercials is with a father who's fixing the sink. He's under the sink putting the pipes back together, and his little one walked by and said, "Daddy, can I help?" And he said, "No, this is a big person's job." And the little boy looked dejected, and he's walking away, and Dad looks out and sees this little dejected person, and the next scene is 4 feet under the sink. They're working together. Did it take longer? Absolutely. But giving our kids that sense that they are capable of doing things takes our time. Letting them know that they have their own unique sense and can make choices takes time. It's far easier to say to a two-year-old, it's time for bed and here's your jammies. Far better to say to them, and you certainly don't say to them, do you want to go to bed or not? You never say that to a two-year-old. They'll never want to go to bed, and you'll never get any sleep. But you can say, do you want to go to bed now with your red pajamas or now with your blue pajamas? That takes more time. But kids need our time. Parenting is not an efficient profession. And if they show up with red bottoms, blue top, so what? They've got their jammies on. They're getting ready for bed. I've always said any choices they make that are not life-threatening, morally threatening, or unhealthy, let it go. The teenager with the purple hair, it will grow out. I can't tell you how many parents have come up to me after they've gotten their teens through the teen years, say, you know what? What was a godsend for me was just remembering it's not life-threatening, morally threatening, or unhealthy when my kid dyes his hair purple or paints the toenails. You know, you just look at it and go, yeah, he's making a decision, his own choices. Let him do it. The more responsibility and decisions we allow our children to make, the less likely they are to be easily led because they're very good at making choices. And when that high-status social bully says to all the other girls, I don't like the new girl. You want to be in my group? Don't eat lunch with her. If your child has gone through red pajama, blue pajama, three out, we'll pick one. Here's your school clothes, here's your play clothes. Just in clothing area alone, she is more likely to be able to make a decision right there that this is mean and have the courage to go sit next to that new girl. Or your son in the locker room when somebody is tormenting another child because of their race or their religion or their gender or physical or mental ability, the big five for hate crimes. Can your son say, back off, leave him alone? Because from a very young age, you've allowed them to constantly increase responsibility and decision-making in basics, like what they eat, the clothing that they wear, and the more choices we give them that say you have agency in your life, the more likely they are to stand up and speak out. And I said at the very beginning, I'd bring up our role. How do you deal with people that are targeting other people? How do you deal with hired help? How do you deal with somebody moving through the grocery store a little slower than you'd like them to? How do you deal with a bigoted relative? Your children are watching. So we need to walk our talk and talk our walk for our children to be able to see that we make decisions. We're not easily led. We don't do to please others. That we also have a strong sense of self. So we want our young people to know that we're here for them, that we will give them that time. And I'm not talking that quality time you read about in the magazines where you say, kids, we're going to take a day off and we're going to go to the museum. And the kid says, I don't want to go to the museum. You're going to the museum and you're going to have a good time. And no, you cannot invite your friends. This is quality time with your parents. Have you ever seen people do that, be miserable? Shut up, kid. We're having fun. And you're not having fun. Or do you know how much money this fun has cost us? One of the worst I heard a parent say was, shut up, kid, we're praying. You know, what a prayerful attitude there. Maybe what that child, that little squiggly toddler needs is to be able to go outside and take a walk, and that may be your spiritual journey that week, Sunday school in the forest, a kind of thing, because that's what your child needs is for us to recognize during the time we're with them, how are they feeling? How are they responding? So it takes time. And time is the T of the Tao. It's an acronym. It's like an algebraic formula that doesn't give you an answer. It gives you a way through an answer. They need our time. They need our affection, a sense of optimism. So time, that can be hanging time with your teenager. Sometimes with an older child, just getting in the car and driving with them where neither of you can leap out on the highway, you can bring up uncomfortable topics with them, and they may look at you or roll their eyes, but you aren't face-to-face. You're looking outward, and you can bring it. I remember when our oldest was going off to college, I was driving her there, and, we probably hadn't gotten out of Colorado yet on our way to California when I talked to her, having been a university instructor, talked to her about the whole issue with people who might stalk you or people who might do things because of games that they're playing, and put you in an uncomfortable situation. And she rolled her eyes and she said, I knew we wouldn't get out of Colorado before you brought some of this stuff up, but I'm so glad I did. Because when she was in university, she called me once to tell me that one of her peers had come to her, gone to a party and gotten very drunk. And then she was raped and she didn't know who to tell. And Anna could handle it and then call me to talk about what should she do. But had we not had that time to have that discussion, a very uncomfortable one in the car, she might not have known or felt comfortable calling me, having been a university person, knowing what can happen on university campuses. So it takes time. It's that time for the little one to learn to tie their shoes, to learn to ride a bike, to be able to be potty trained. One of the first time in their life, they will have full control over a basic body function. It takes time and patience on our part. For those middle years, that time where we just sit and listen, because this is the age between 7 and 10 where they question everything. And so they ask a lot of questions. We don't always have to have the answers. We can even say, that was an interesting question. Talk to me about it. And find out where they're coming from. You may be surprised. It might not have been where you thought it was at all. So at all the different ages, let's give them the time. Hanging time, being around time, purposeful time, play time. We have an issue with the internet today where kids are glued to it. A dear friend, Robert Bateman, who is a phenomenal nature artist, also gave a TED Talk on children in nature. Dr. Scott, who did Dinosaur Train, wrote a powerful book called Raising a Wild Child. How important, both of them talk about how important it is that we take the time to get out in nature without all those electronics so we can help develop that sense of wonder and a oneness with nature. But that all takes time. Taking time with the older kids to be able to know who their friends are, asking them to show you what kind of things they know how to do online that we have no clue what it's all about. They love, especially in the teen years, to teach you something, but that takes time. And we need to be willing to give that time to learn from them. That way they know they can talk to you about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And it isn't just that everything has to be perfect for them to carry on a conversation with you or no conversation at all. So the more we allow our kids make choices and decisions and mistakes and be held accountable for them, the more likely they are to be able to know they can come to us in the rough times. So we look at time, making sure we give our children time, not to overpower them, not to control everything, but sometimes to just sit back and watch them enjoy life themselves in their own way, but we're present to them. It's like teaching swimming. When I was a lifeguard, you know, I can't do it for them. I can be there to cheer them on. I can be there to instruct them on new ways to do strokes and the like, or what to do if you find yourself in trouble in the water, rather than panicking. What is the thing you can do? Roll on your back. and try to relax. If we can teach them those, they have to do it themselves, but we're there giving them the time to show them the skills that we have in all areas of their lives. They need our affection in the Tao. Tao is T-A-O, again, a Zen Buddha, that Zen Buddhist term, which is a path. Each one of your children will take their own path in their life, but we need to be able to be willing to go on each one's journey alongside them. So they need affection, a smile, a hug, and humor every single day. When they reach the teen years, especially our young boys, may even push you away a bit for that hug. But I go back to a little video from Japan, and they had us, this teacher in the primary grades had a sign on the wall with a child bowing, a child hugging someone, a child giving a high five, a child giving a fist bump. And when the child walked up to the teacher, they put their hand on which of those three or four or five choices that child would like to do today. One day the child may be wanting to bow with the teacher. Another might want a hug. And another might want to do the fist bump with them. But you allow, even at that age, children to be able to express how they want to express affection to you or a greeting to you. And each child, some of them will be more comfortable with the bowing. Others would be with the fist bump. But if you allow them even at that young age to make those choices about their relationship with us, then when they reach the older years, especially the pre-puberty and puberty when they're trying to figure out themselves, you can say to them, okay, what's it going to be today, a hug or a fist bump? Or would you like to bow to one another, to honor one another? Giving them those choices, but they need our affection shown in lots of different ways, cheering them on, being present to them. But that affection for every child needs a sense of connection at all ages. It's normal for young boys to pull away from their mom when they reach puberty because their job now is to begin to be drawn to other people more their age. And there's that push away from mom, and some moms get so upset about that, or dads will say, don't you push your mother. It's never a mean push or anything. It's just a sign that, you know what, I'm moving on. And we are their parent till they reach puberty. Once they reach puberty, we become their model and their guide, not their friend. I get so upset with parents who say to me, my teenager is my best friend, to which I say, get a life. Because what you really need is you need to find somebody your own age to talk about what's going on in your life. You need to be there as a model and a guide. You're going to clean up your act? Do it before they reach puberty because you are their guide. Now, in adulthood, we definitely will want to be moving into a friendship with our young adults. But if we have nurtured in the parenting role when they're young and then the model and the guide, friendship will flow much more naturally. And you really do want a friend because, remember, they pick out your nursing home when you get older. So you really want to be connected with them. They're going to be creating the new generation as well. So we want to stay connected, but we want to be their guides during those years with that affection as well and being able to talk to them about how do we express affection. Are you uncomfortable with auntie poking your cheeks and wriggling them, or that uncle who hugs them too closely? You need to let your children know it's okay. And that's why I love starting with what the one Japanese teacher did, with giving children the agency where they decide, auntie, I would like to give you a fist bump instead of you pinching my cheeks. That says to them, I have control over my own body. And I'm beginning to relate to other people without doing it in a hurtful or harmful way. So they need our affection, a smile, hug, and humor. But part of that humor needs to be a recognition that we don't ever want to laugh at our children. Teasing is laughing with, taunting is laughing at. And what's so difficult today is in the media, we see an awful lot of taunting, laughing at. And our young people are picking that up. So we want to examine ourselves. Are we taunting our children or are we teasing them? Are we laughing with them or laughing at them? What's the difference? The one who is teasing and the person teased can swap roles. And that means you as an adult and your 5-year-old, your 10-year-old, your 15-year-old can tease you and you can tease them. It's a mutual thing. Taunting is based on an imbalance of power and it's very one-sided. And sadly to say, it not only happens in bullying in our schools, but as a parent, we may say something and we have a smile on our face or we're laughing the child as opposed to laughing with them. In teasing, it's not intended to hurt or harm. In taunting, it is intended to hurt the child. Like we need to get back at them or to prove ourselves right. No, we don't. In teasing, it maintains the dignity of both parties. That means that you can be silly, but you're not doing things that are harmful to yourself. And you're not doing things that are harmful either physically or emotionally to the child. In taunting, there's humiliating and cruel, demeaning and bigoted comments, thinly disguised as jokes. Our young people, especially from 10 on, will say laugh out loud, just joking, to appear. But you see, if we model for our children how to laugh with one another, they are less likely to taunt one of their peers as well. Remember, we have to walk our talk and talk our walk. In teasing, it pokes the fun in a lighthearted, clever, and benign way. You know your child's vulnerabilities, and it would be so easy to slip one of those in. And you don't want to ever do that. That's mean and cruel. It's laughing at your child, not with them. In teasing, it's meant to get both of you to laugh. And laughter is such a healing thing in the good times and in the rough times. So a bit of laughter is a very healing thing. We have all been through a pandemic, and all of us have faced all different kinds of losses during that time. And we must remember that our children have too, especially if they were in those preteen teen years where the social life that they were so desperate for was shut out for a period of time. And so can we use humor to laugh? The more we laugh, the more healing can occur. I think it's important as educators, I am one, that we get our students to laugh. Now, laughing at someone, I know as a parent, there's time when your child makes a comment that was inappropriate or just off the wall, and we have to turn our heads and laugh. That's okay. We're not laughing at them. And it's hard to, when you see they've made a disaster of the living room, and it certainly doesn't look like Picasso, that we may look at it and say, you have a job here, you need to clean this up, and then go in the kitchen and just be laughing about, geez, you know, he was very creative in that regard, so it's okay. And then teasing is only a small part of our relationship, so laughing with our children should be a part of every day in our life, but it's not all the time. In taunting, we diminish that child and that the relationship we have. We're always picking on them, always saying something about they're not holding their shoulders up or they're pouting or just basically ripping their sense of self. And then all of us as parents are going to blow it. We said something at the wrong time, the wrong place, didn't mean it the way it came out. But when you see your child look down or be upset about it, what do? We stop. We stop right away and say, I'm so sorry. Sometimes we have to say, I'm walking out the door, starting this one over because I really blew it. Which also gives your child then permission to see that when they've lost it and they've said, I hate you, because they're angry with you, they can come back and say, I really blew that one. That was a mean and cruel thing for me to say. And I thought, you need to know that I'm angry that I didn't get the car this weekend. And so they're beginning to learn to express the feelings that they have, and they're not dismissed. But we've told them we make mistakes. I don't have to pretend to find a mistake to make so I can show them we tend to make them just in our normal everyday life. But in taunting, if you continue it when the child shows distress, know that you're taunting them. And that is not a good thing you want them to ever model. Because then you get the phone call where the school is saying, Johnny was taunting a classmate and wouldn't let up. So we want to make sure that smile, hug, and humor, it's humor with them, not at them. I would also caution you here, you are going to see from about 10 years old on up, kids using gallows humor to get through all these rough times, a death in the family through the pandemic, or something canceled for them that meant something very important, social activity that was canceled. And so we need to know that they may use gallows humor to get through it. I often use the example of a 12-year-old whose parents died in the plane crash when the Eastern Airlines went down in the Everglades and no bodies were recovered. And a year later, the 12-year-old was asked how he was coping, and he had a bit of a smile on his face. And I could tell something was coming when I was watching the interview. And he said, well, I just remind myself that those alligators got first-class food when they ate my parents. Now, the reporter was so taken back, but that's gallows humor. That's a way a child is coping with a tremendous loss. So we need to understand in the good times and the rough times, our children need our T-A-O, time, affection, and sense of optimism. Now to get to the optimism part. I'm not talking, as Paulette mentioned, I'm not talking about that rose-colored optimism where all is right with the world. No, it's not. It's not at all. No matter what age our children are, it's not. It's what Viktor Frankl, a death camp survivor, called tragic optimism, that when we have been brought to our knees in grief, can we get up in the morning, fix our children breakfast, say, we're going to get through this? That's what our children needed to hear. Notice I didn't say, you're going to get through this. We're going to get through this. Again, I go back to those six critical life messages. I believe in you. I trust in you. I know you can handle this. You're listened to, cared for, very important to me. But that optimism will depend in large part about how optimistic we are in our rough times. In the everyday adversities that confront us, our children are learning from that. I got stuck in Winnipeg on my way to the Paw, Manitoba, in the middle of a snowstorm. And the plane can't get in for 8 hours. Some of those people ranted and raved for 8 hours. Some people wanted their money back. It's the only way to get to the Paw, but they wanted their money back. Some people hit the bar for 8 hours. And some people read a good book for 8 hours. I ask you, when's the last time anybody gave you 8 hours of uninterrupted time to read a good book? It is your point of view. All three groups got on that same plane 8 hours later. Some were still angry. They were so riled up, they were ready to throttle the pilot, which would have only made us later. Some 8 hours in the bar weren't sure, didn't care if they were on a plane, and some had read a good book. And so we need to look at, our child is sick. We need to be home with them, but we got 1,000 things to do at work. We need to pull back and say, okay, this is where we're at with this. So my child needs my time. Can I put that in a way that this is a good time for both of us? It's a connecting time. It's a time for me to take time to care for them. And so it's putting the life, your family life and your child's life in perspective. But I would also caution you, there's a time you need to surrender some of that. Our middle daughter had been diagnosed with cancer. She's obviously very fine now. She has a child, one of our grandchildren. But she had a life-threatening cancer. And during that time, a dear friend of mine who had had breast cancer said, why don't I go and sit with her for a while? Nope, I have to do it myself. You know, I'm the mother, and I needed to be there for her. Well, when we could finally, I stayed with her during her radiation treatment, but finally when the family could come in and visit, our son, who was only a year and a half younger than her, came in to see his sister, and he had taken his dark Italian hair and turned it blonde. Now, I have always lectured about it's not life-threatening, morally threatening, or unhealthy, but I was at a vulnerable point. I lost it. You've got your sister here, and why are you doing? And his dad very wisely said, Joe, I think we need to leave right now. So they went, and you know what? He went and got his hair dark again. And he said, Mom, I did this for you. But I want you to know it's going to be blonde for graduation. You know, we could both laugh. But when I could finally sit down and talk to him, he says, Mom, I'm scared. I'm scared for my sister, and I'm scared for what would happen to her. But you know what? I also wanted you to be at my soccer game. And it was like a kick in the butt that, you know what? We were dealing with a life-threatening situation, but our other child needed us too. And I could have let my dear friend who'd been through breast cancer be there with my daughter. In the end, she and my daughter got very close dealing with something they had in common. And her daughter came over and said, you know, I'm rather jealous of Maria's relationship. And I said, well, you know what? I was too, of your mom's relationship with my daughter. But we are the caregivers here, you and me. We need to let them share the relationship they have as people that had cancer. But it was an eye-opener to me. I didn't always do it the best. But I can say to you, make sure that when one child is dealing with a major thing, it's okay to let others help and be tuned into what your other children may need as well. And yes, he did do his hair blonde for graduation.
There's quite a few people on the line. I'm not quite sure if they want to ask any questions.
Oh, I'll just wrap this up real quick, and I'm open to questions.
All right.
With that sense of optimism, it's again, it's the realistic optimism that we can get through this. It's an old Sufi saying, this too will pass. And that's often said in the context of the rough times. But I want you to understand that's not the whole quote. Sufis are people of wisdom in the Muslim tradition. The whole thing is remember, in the good times and the rough, this too will pass. And if we can have that sense of optimism, holding that and being with that, that we will get through this. And in the very good times, that laughter is short, enjoy it. And know that we will get through the rough times with, if we do time, affection, sense of optimism every day with our children, when the rough times come, we'll be far more capable, and so will they, of getting through them. I'm open to questions.
Okay, anybody want to ask any question or make a statement?
I just wanted to say that I appreciate the information that you provided as far as like the, you know, the different types of affection that we can give. Because a lot of times people want to say it has to be a hug, but no, there's various options, and every child is different, and every child can have a different level of what it is. Like you said, it could be a fist pump or a handshake, but it's still that physical connection. So I appreciate that very much. And then also, right before the what else it was that I really liked that I hadn't heard about before, or not in that sort of way. So what else?
I'm listening. You're good. Take your time.
I definitely appreciate that. The taunting and the teasing. Yeah, definitely.
Oh,
that's
different.
A great I like the fact that there's a difference, because a lot of times, people will be say, "Oh, I'm just teasing," but it's actually the opposite of something else, and it's very detrimental sometimes to the child. Or and then again, you don't want to model that, because then your child goes on to do that to others, and it's just, and it becomes, you know, something that just doesn't stop. So, yeah.
Exactly.
So I appreciate this. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
No, and I appreciate
it's
when you were
to
saying
know that difference.
When you were talking, yeah, the taunting or making fun of someone, or you're laughing, but the person's not laughing with you. And I didn't learn that life lesson until I'm an adult and someone pointed out to me, the person's not laughing with you, Paulette. Then I realized, oh, then that hurts. So I never, from that point on, I stopped that, you know, because if everyone else is laughing and the person that it's aimed at is not, then that's not a good thing.
It is not.
It's not.
And I think it's so important, as your one caller said, to recognize the difference between teasing and taunting, because, as she said, if we taunt, we have role model for our children. I've had little ones in school come up to me and say, they were teasing me. And I said, sweetheart, I'll bet they weren't. I'll bet they were taunting you, or you wouldn't be crying. And I think it's real important. I started about 4 and a half teaching children the difference between teasing and taunting. The beauty of that, if you teach children the difference between teasing and taunting, you have laid the foundation for them to understand the difference between flirting, which is normal, natural, and necessary and helps keep the human race going, and sexual bullying. Because teasing is to flirting what sexual bullying is to taunting. It's very important
that
we're laying the foundation for.
I like that. I like that very much, because, again, there's a boundary there, and it could, as you get older, you can use that as, like you said, sort of like a, to kind of mask the sexual, sort of sexual harassment type of stuff.
Yeah, we tend to. If you've ever watched that movie, he's just not that into you. The little girl's getting sand thrown in her face, and her mom says, he's flirting with you. No, he's not. He's being mean. Let's call it what it is.
Right.
How many young boys and girls have found themselves in abusive relationships and thought, oh, well, he's being kind to me. No, he's being controlling, just not quite as controlling as he's moving toward. You know, flirting is like teasing. It's mutual. It makes you feel good. Taunting and sexual bullying doesn't do any of that. And in my bullying work, the bully, the not-so-innocent bystander, I talk about that, laying that foundation, and I think it's so critical that we do that, and that we model it, and then we help our young people, and we call our children. All I have to say to a child, are you laughing with him or laughing at him? Yeah, but we're all laughing, but he's not laughing. You can have a group laughing at somebody, and that's very painful.
Yes.
That's those not-so-innocent bystanders.
Yes.
And so it all flows together in the good times and the rough times and in bullying. And we go back to what we want. We want responsible, resourceful, resilient, compassionate human beings who are willing to stand up for values and against injustices. But they must see us doing it, and we have to help them stay true to themselves. In the sense that they have a strong sense of self, which is in relation to others. Are there any other questions or comments?
Anybody? Your last chance.
I have one. I like the idea of giving kids choices. I have a grandson, and he loves to do those sort of off-center things, like the purple hair, and he likes to put on tattoos, but we do have a rule. It has to be a wash off. And some of that, sometimes we find it hard to stomach, but he seems to have more of a free spirit than the other grandchildren. Sometimes, you know, people have talked to us and said, you shouldn't let him do that. That's just offensive. And I go, offensive to who? And he's so happy when we allow him to do that, or we take him to the barbershop and, you know, he can be free with making a choice about what his hair is going to look like.
Exactly. But you know what? I'll tell you something. As a grandmother, you can share this with your children. I often ask, do any of you have a strong-willed child? And they raise their hand. I said, let me tell you about something about strong-willed children. They are easier in the older teen years than compliant children, because when they're little, they're easily led by their parents and by their teachers, and they do to please them. In the teen years, children who are easily led and do to please are no longer easily led and done to please by adults, but by their peers. I've had parents say, look at this kid. He was such a good kid, so well-behaved, so well-mannered. Now look at him. And I look at the kid. I get to know the parents. I say, you know what? He hasn't changed. From the time he was little, he dressed the way you told him to dress, acted the way you told him to act, said the things you told him to say. He's been listening to somebody else tell him what to do.
Instead of
himself. He's been doing it. He hasn't changed. He's still listening to somebody else tell him what to do. Problem is, isn't you anymore. So I want that strong-willed child to know that mom and dad's going to give you a big hug and say, I knew there was a reason we were getting you up through puberty. You know, because that's the kind of child you want, who is not doing anything that's life-threatening, morally threatening, or unhealthy. And believe me, the hair grows back. And to express his own individuality in his own way, says to a child, I can be me apart from you. And I can be me in relationship to others. And being that free spirit is something we don't celebrate enough culturally.
Mm. Well, because we didn't have role models to emulate. See,
you let them do those things. Yes.
We don't know what to do.
You let them do those things. You let them do those things. Take those little risks. Take those little leaps. Let them jump off of something. You know, let them experiment. Let them find out about gravity when they're out in nature. You let them do those. They rarely take the big leaps in the teen years. They don't need to. You've already let them be themselves.
Wow. Okay. If there aren't any further questions, we've been on American Health Crisis Blog Talk Radio. Barbara Coloroso, our guest speaker, and this is her corner. That's what I call it. We don't have a Dear Abby
anymore. Thank you, Paulette.
So we need something or go crazy.
If anyone would like any more information on any of these and handouts that you want to share with relatives and the like, if you go to www.kidsareworthit, all spelled out, you will see the handout on bullying at the very top. It's 64 pages digitally. You can get an idea about bullying. But you also see the parenting handout, Raising an Ethical Human Being, Parenting Through Crisis, which you'll see time, affection, and a sense of optimism over again. And the bullying handout right up in the top corner of the page goes through teasing and taunting and flirting and sexual bullying, and what bullying is, what it's not, and how to raise those kids willing to stand up for others. So welcome to the website, and it's all free. You can download any of this. I think the more we get out there, the better.
You're
welcome.
I did write out her website, so you're free to go to that. Or if you just say her name, Barbara Coloroso, you can get to her website that way too. And hopefully she'll be on again.
Oh, I'd love to.
I already have something
to know that, Paulette. You know, I do a 30-hour course on it. And I'm walking and talking it all the time, and now watching my own children raise the grandchildren and also being a party in their lives has been a wonderful thing. Amy told me how great that was. I might have skipped parenting, just moved on to grandparenting. Not really. But, you know, our kids really are worth
it. One of the books that I have right now is that Parenting Through Crisis. I like the section.
Yeah.
It really hit home. You had on one of the pages, it was the language of a family versus the language of dysfunction.
Yes.
And I said, Robert, can you on that one? That was such an eye-opener, how you say, you know, one thing one way and you say it another way is more friendly.
It's family-centered instead of me. Well, you know, what I need to say. Language matters.
So,
language and body language.
I'm hoping I can get you to talk on that, too.
I'd be happy to. You know that, Paulette. You tell me the topic, I'll do it.
Oh, yes. I want the language of family versus the language of dysfunction, because so many of us, because as I was reading through it, I saw my own self in there, and I said, wow, just never thought about it. And,
Kids Are Worth It, you'll know both my husband and I did not come from the most functioning family. And we did not. And we both had to find our way. And luckily, the two of us could lean on one another, because what we were missing were similar things that we could help one another with. But I said to my own children when I became a grandparent, I said, is there anything you don't want Dad and I, always included Dawn in there too, so it's not just blaming me, anything you'd like us not to do with your children that we might have done with you, knowing there was nothing? Yeah, right. The oldest said, I'll have to think about it. The middle one right away said, yes. And I said, what? And she said, whenever we were out in public, Mom, you would grab our arm and squeeze it hard if we were doing something wrong. My heart sunk. You know why? That's what my mother did. And what I was doing was using an old parenting tool that didn't serve anybody well. And when she said that, I said, I promise you, I will never do that to your son. And I never have. But it was somebody, and I said, you know, your job is called evolution. Your job is to do a better job than we did. And we worked hard at it. And we loved parenting. And we're here to help you in the good times and the rough. But know that you can do a better job than we did.
Yes, that's why my goal is to be a better grandparent than I was a parent to my own.
Me too.
Because there's always room for growth. It's like I want to be the best, and I didn't have these books and, you know, the topics to go to and all that. So now it's like I'm just lapping up reading and wanting to do it better. Okay, Barbara.
It's been a joy.
I'll send you a message, and we'll do another Tuesday when you can. And this is great. All
happy
right.
To. You
thank
know
you,
that, Paulette. And thank you, everyone who is listening.
Yes, thank
all
you.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Good night,
bye,
all.
Bye, Paulette.
Good night.